This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Around upon Free FM, RFM, and MP. As always, I'm Grady, and live on Discord, we got Josh.
Hey!
Today's episode is gonna be a fun one. We might not have a pay-per-view to talk about, but as you can probably tell from my nasal sounding, I am ill. Josh is in the middle of a storm, may lose power, so let's see who's here by the end of the show. Instead of talking about people disappearing from the show, let's talk about people appearing. That's a really bad segue to talk about Tatum Paxley's debut on SmackDown.
Yeah, great to see her working with Charlotte and Alexa. That gets her immediately into the upper card. We've been saying for years that we love everything she does and her character and stuff. And it's like, and the two characters that she could work best off of are Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, I think especially playing off, like, we never pulled the trigger on exploding the Bliss and Flair team. And so having her come up and continue to play on those dynamics, being another creepy, weird person with Alexa, helping Charlotte for now, but I'm sure, as we've seen many times over with Tatum, she kind of drives her friends away eventually. Everybody ends up leaving her, so she's got a few built-in storylines there, and as you say, catapulted straight up, and working with some of those upper mid-card main event kind of women on SmackDown already.
Yep. I've heard some people theorizing that Tatum might actually be the manifestation of Lily, which would be interesting. It'd be a heck of a payoff for that whole thing. To get Tatum Paxley.
Yeah, definitely possible. There's so many different routes they can go, and obviously she's been here for a week, right? I don't think if that is the payoff, we will necessarily know within the first few months, but it'll be interesting to see what they end up working towards. For me, the only sort of downside of all of this is it's yet another woman on that SmackDown women's roster. We know we got the couple of returns on Raw, bolstered it a little bit, but SmackDown women's division just continues to get deeper and deeper.
Yeah, but it feels like this is the time when you would start calling people up. So there's definitely, it definitely feels like there'll be people that will be added to the Raw brand. I think they already added somebody on Raw this week. I think maybe Lola Vice.
Yeah, I think if you were looking at the sort of next people to come up, I think when we did that, we looked at Lola, we looked at Tatum. Makes sense if Tatum heads over to SmackDown to send Lola up to Raw. Can play off with a lot of the characters on Raw as well. But I'd be interested to see it if it happens. Sticking on SmackDown, we got a rematch, Baron Corbin, Trick Williams for that United States Championship. Baron Corbin does the same old stuff, retains his title, and then Carmelo ain't too happy about that backstage, and we continue to sort of tease Trick versus Carmelo, but now Corbin's in the middle.
Yeah. Perhaps Corbin is just supposed to be a transitional and supposed to transition it from Trick to Carmelo without direct confrontation, again, to lead us towards a potential future match for maybe a bigger title.
Yeah, it does feel like at this point they are holding off on doing Trick Carmelo, so I have to hope that there's a payoff down the line between them, but we'll wait and see between those two. Another person on SmackDown that I want to talk about, Rey Fénix. He had a pretty lackluster first year. We were talking about how much, you know, cooler, how better presented Penta was, how he was connecting with the fans. Ray Fenix looked like he was on the verge of just sort of fading off. They give him the AAA Cruiserweight title, and now he's putting on bangers on SmackDown against mid-card talents. He's, getting himself into a feud with Ricky Saints. I think he's been on the show every single week since he won that title. What a turnaround for Ray Fenix in the, you know, last 3 months.
Yeah. And I think that was all it was Phoenix, unfortunately, was hampered heavily by the fact that AEW forced him to stay 6 months after Penta left. And that delayed everything they could have done with Phoenix versus what they were able to do with Penta. And this is unfortunately a thing that we're having to catch up. But now that we have him as the Cruiserweight champion, him defending it basically on a weekly basis, seemingly, and it has elevated him to a higher level, high enough that he's actually involved in a tournament to crown a number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship that's currently held by Roman Reigns.
What a perfect segue. Yes, we got the title will be defended on Raw in Mexico City. Tournament has Penta versus Laredo Kid. It was already happened. Penta has advanced. It'll also have Psycho Clown versus La Parka, Dragon Lee versus Dr. Wagner Jr., and as you mentioned, Ray Fenix versus Al Fiscal. I think Ray's a pretty easy win on his first round for sure. There's probably a good reason Penta and Ray are on opposite sides of the bracket, right?
Yeah, I mean, if this final is not Penta versus Ray Fenix, they have screwed heavily up, or somebody got hurt along the way, because as much as I like the talent and the other matches, it's got to be, if you're going to do AAA versus Roman Reigns, you're going to do it in Mexico City, it's got to be their two top stars in that final. That in the triple between the AAA and main roster with the for the Latino wrestlers, it's got to be Penta versus Rey. It's got to be those two. They will give them 30 minutes. Give them the final 30 minutes of the show. Let them go. And you will have one heck of a show, one heck of a match. And ultimately, it should be, because he is a Raw superstar, it should be Penta that wins this tournament. And I want to see Penta versus Roman Reigns. I know there's no way that the winner of this tournament wins the championship. That's just not going to happen. There's no universe, no alternate universe where that happens. But the fact is, him versus Roman puts more eyes on Penta, puts him higher on the card, makes it so that he might be a Rumble winner, might be a briefcase winner, gets him in the position where he can become world champion. And I'm all for that.
Yeah, Penta obviously lost his Intercontinental Championship, and we were immediately talking about him. We were even talking about him in the next 6 months episode that we did about how he needs to go up the card, and this is one way to do it. As you said, Psycho Clown, La Parka, Dragon Lee, Dr. Wagner Jr., real outside shots. I don't feel like any of them versus Roman Reigns is the match that Penta versus Roman Reigns would be. Maybe you want to put Wagner or Lee against Penta in the final instead of Rey to hold off on that match, but I would much rather just see, as you say, the banger between Fenix and Penta. We know they can go at it. Just let them go. And I think there's still some stuff down the line as well. Obviously, this is on Raw in Mexico City. This isn't at Worlds Collide. This isn't anywhere else. So there's a possibility here, you know, you do a Penta Ray Fenix in the final, Penta comes out with the win, goes against Reigns, classic. I know Reigns doesn't want interference. Maybe Usos come out anyway. Rey comes for the save. You could book yourself a Lucha Bros versus Usos match, Worlds Collide. There's a lot to do there that I think the storytelling is just better with Penta and Fenix in the final. I do think it's a bit disappointing to have a Luchadors tournament with so much AAA talent, and it's the two main roster guys you put into the final, but the matter of the fact is that they're just on a different level to the other guys from AAA. And I want to talk a little bit as well. We talked about Chad Gable's win last week, but we're a bit pushed for time, so I want to bring it back around, give Chad a little bit of time. His theme is the theme that we will end up playing. But yeah, what do you think about Chad Gable coming out on top of Penta, finally dispelling this impossible-to-beat Luchador curse? And for now, sitting at the top of the mid-card.
Wonderful. It's everything we wanted ever since the start of the El Grande Americana storyline for Chad Gable. It took us a little while, took an injury, took one heck of a storyline between Chad Gable and the new El Grande Americano. But we eventually got to where we wanted to go. And I'm hoping for a decent title reign, decent length, and that he truly gets the shine that he deserves, because he truly does deserve it.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? It's one of those cases where waiting so long made it better. And that's not me pushing for people suffering to get what they want. But the fact that there was an injury that stopped it, there was all of this other stuff in between, made it so much sweeter when he did capture the championship. And I immediately look at, you know, the 50 different matchups that the Raw mid-card division has and where he could go with this. And I think it's all about making sure that he lands. Now, getting the championship is one thing, landing those first couple of feuds to settle yourself. You know, you don't want to be a Liv Morgan, right? Capture the title, nothing happens with you for 100 days. So we know Chad Gable is offering Rey Mysterio a match. Banger. Let's see how it all goes for Chad in his first couple of months as champion.
Yeah. I could totally see Chad Gable taking the Intercontinental title and defending it at Worlds Collide. And I would do it in the Mexican City part of it. Because he did say he would come back at some point. Why not have him come back with the Intercontinental title and defend it in front of the Mexican people?
There you go. Heard it here first. Lock it in. Well, we are roughly halfway through the show, and that means it is time to go into our entrance theme. As I mentioned, it is Chad Gable's, and it is playing for you right about now. On Free FM, RFM, and MPR, we always end up talking about the bloodline So if we were to run them down this time, it looks like Solo Sikoa, Jey Uso, they were the through line. We're talking about how much Solo Sikoa is doing amazing on his own. We want to extract him out of this bloodline piece. They end up getting themselves a match at the end of the show. Jey ends up winning said match and is now talking about delivering Solo Sikoa to Roman Reigns. And, that's all I got.
I am still interested. I still think it is interesting though that this is basically putting Solo in the same character and position as Jacob Fatu. Supposedly, at least initially, looked like to be a reluctant member of the bloodline. I think maybe they realized they went maybe a too far with the following the orders for Jacob and added Solo to be the true dissenter in the group. I'm still hoping that they still give Solo lots of opportunities to show his personality and stuff. And who knows? Maybe next week we'll get to Raw and we'll get to a segment with Roman and Solo, and Roman will kick Solo out because he never wanted him didn't want him there because Jey was defying orders. Or maybe we'll do tribal combat again. Yeah, maybe we'll do tribal combat again.
Yeah, we always have an infinite number of tribal combats. I think he's starting to come off. He's getting the momentum behind him, and just putting him back in the bloodline feels like a step backwards. Just with how long everything takes to develop with the bloodline storylines. We talk about Chad Gable and how that was awesome because we had to wait for it and it sort of built up to the big moment. The bloodline, everything kind of moves at a snail's pace, and that means that when something big does happen, it is pretty big because you've ended up waiting for it for a really long time. But it means that if Solo is going to merge himself back in and eventually break out, we could be talking a year, 2 years down the line before Solo ends up breaking himself back out. I don't know. A little concerned radar going on just for a guy who I was starting to get behind as a single star. But hey, the wording has been pretty specific. It doesn't say Solo has to join. Just kind of that we're going to get the segment between Solo and Roman. Still heaps you can do, and with War Games coming up, both teams need to, you know, fill themselves out anyway. And talking about people who can just absolutely destroy somebody else, Obafemi, Bron Breakker, we got a little tease of it last week, and now we're getting full-on face-offs.
It's definitely interesting in seeing where they're going. I think it's more funny though with the little seeing Braun like slyly play around with the crowd and stuff. It's very funny. They need to turn him face, but and get him out of the vision, and maybe we can get him where he's supposed to be. I'm all for this. I want to see. This is a match that I could see probably a dozen times and I'd never get bored of it, because it's going to be, as Big E says, meaty men slapping meat.
Yeah, I think for Braun, it really, the vision is in such a weird spot. We need to see him break out of it, even if it isn't how we thought he was originally going to break out of it. Austin Theory, Logan Paul, Maxine, they all kind of work in what's happening over there. Maybe we're waiting for Logan to come right before we do it. I don't know the timeline on Logan, but he is appearing week after week. That is obviously different than getting physical, but can be something there. Because the vision is, it's run its course. It ran its course a little while ago, and Bron Breakker and to a lesser extent Bronson Reed.
Unfortunately, it never got on the course. It started on the course and then immediately hit the wall with the injuries.
Yeah, that's
fair. Never was able to recover.
Yeah, I don't know if you watch WWE Unreal, but they cover that a fair bit in one of those episodes where it's like, oh, we're planning this. Oh, nope, there goes an injury. Okay, we'll pivot to the... Oh, there's another injury. We'll pivot to the... And Bronson's injured too. And it was... Yeah, the group was cursed, doomed, whatever it ended up being. But if we, you know, pull some sort of Austin Theory, Maxine, Logan, douchebag group out of this, and we pull out a badass Bron Breakker going up against Oba Femi, you know, they build a bit of respect between each other. Hey, we still kind of got to the correct outcome. We just took a really weird path to get there.
Yeah, and I think maybe the cooling of it might have actually done Bron a little bit of a favor, because it will alleviate the, are we possibly shoving this guy down our fans' throats, concerns that they had, which was explained on Unreal as part of why he didn't win the Rumble. Fortunately, I think ultimately, now him not winning the Rumble was a good call, because he immediately got hurt immediately afterwards. But yeah, I think maybe there's a dozen people, I think, at this point that we could see winning the briefcase or the Rumble and it making sense. And Bron is one of them. Oba Femi is one of them. Watching them clash is going to be fun. That's a WrestleMania main event in the future too. It could be something that it could be the next John Cena versus Randy Orton, because they're both young guys and they could go forever.
Yeah, I definitely think that it is the clash that people wanted to see the second that Oba finished up with Brock. I've been enjoying the segments with Heyman backstage because Heyman has kind of been favoring Oba because that's who his guy sort of governed on the way out, versus the Vision, who he's barely even interacting with at this point, and Bron's picking up on that, so it could be another wrench in the plan as well, to see what Heyman ends up playing into all of this. And that's not me advocating for Paul Heyman managing Oba Femi or anything. It's just another piece that's on the table that we gotta fit all together. Raw Women's Division. We got a couple of segments. Liv Morgan, Becky Lynch, Stephanie Vaquer. That seems to be our main event trio. And then if we look down, we also had a tag team match, Judgment Day's Raquel, Roxanne, with Sol Ruka and Io Sky stepping in to help out Ruka. And that feels like, is that our mid-card four? I guess Io kind of floats between the two, but that's kind of our whole divisions on Raw.
Yeah. It's interesting. Unfortunately, as circumstances are with a group, when you have both championships in the group, it's always going to be kind of circling each other. And unfortunately, that is going to be the pace. But it's like whoever doesn't face Liv is likely to face Raquel. I think that this is yet another like notch towards potentially maybe kicking Perez out of the group, because she was the one that lost this match. I do want to say I do find it interesting that Raquel Perez had a special custom Intercontinental title last week, but had the standard one this week. Maybe weirdly. She got in trouble for it. I don't know.
I don't know what's up with that, but it's I don't know what configuration these three girls are going to end in. Obviously, Liv Morgan's still vaguely tied to Dominic, who's still vaguely tied to JD. Outside of that, it's kind of just the three girls. It's clear that Roxanne is the odd one out, the one without the title, the one they keep mentioning doesn't have a title. I could see her getting booted. I could see them trying to boot her, Raquel standing up for her. Those two sticking together, maybe. I could see Roxanne, you know, flipping out on Raquel, taking that mid-card title. There's a few different opportunities. But, you know, they've been a little bit past their end of the road, especially if we are going to be pulling the trigger with a Becky or with a Stephanie up in the main event with Liv Morgan. Don't know. Unless Roxanne's the one that ends up costing her that match, costing Liv that match, and that's how we can spin it out. I just want us to speed up a little bit with the Judgment Day girls.
Fair.
And then someone I want to talk about, just, you know, we only got a little bit of time left. Big Cass made his return last week. No Enzo with him at the moment. He attacks Javon Evans last week. He attacks Dragon Lee this week. What are your thoughts on this return to Big Cass?
Well, first off, I love how much work he's put in into his physique and stuff. He was always a spectacle at 7 feet, but he was what looked to be like a little bit of out of shape when he was in the company 7 years ago. But at the very least, I'm very happy that he has been able to pull himself back together and get himself right. And I want to see where they go with him, because clearly they're definitely making him a heel, targeting Javon Evans on his first night, then targeting Dragon Lee this week, guys that are generally liked by the WWE Universe on varying degrees, depending on which one we're talking about. But so we'll have to see where they go for him with his first feud. But so far, I'm down.
Yeah, I guess that's just my big question. What do they end up doing with him? And we'll see. We will see. At the moment, it's picking on the smaller guy. Pretty bog standard for a big cast-like character. Alrighty, well, we have made it to the end of the episode. It has been great talking to you.
Baby.
You can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/wrestlingrndup, twitter.com/wrestlingrndup, our YouTube page, youtube.com/wrestlingrndup, and we will catch you next week. Tonight's the big goal. Strike quick but creep slow. The competition is absent the moment that we show. Countdown from 3, go. Press X to reload. Deadly still try to topple the kingdom that we own. Outnumbered but outgunning. We're fearless and crowd stunning. Never win ever on record. There's no one to protect you. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.